Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios, it's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Tackles for loss, a big part of this defense's success all season long. There's another pick in the flat. Kip Lewis. Milroe can't get him. Pick six. Oklahoma building the lead. Wow.
Yeah, that was the third of Jalen Milroe's three interceptions Saturday night in that blowout loss to Oklahoma for the Crimson Tide. Honestly, surprising outcome in that game. Not that Oklahoma won. Look, at home, Oklahoma's a very tough team to play, right? If you're going to go play them in Norman, they're going to be a very hard team to play. But I am surprised it was a 21-point win and just an overall just dominant, just drudging of Alabama, especially the way Alabama's played the last couple of weeks. But, I mean, you look at this game, Jackson Arnold, for everything he didn't do throwing the football as the quarterback for the Sooners, he did it all running the football. 131 yards rushing for them was absolutely massive, especially when you pair that with Xavier Robinson's 106 yards, and he had two touchdowns. I mean, Jackson Arnold was a guy, and look, here's the thing with Jackson Arnold. You look at his passing numbers in that game Saturday night, and you go, wow, he's terrible. No, he's not terrible. Oklahoma's had issues at the wide receiver position all season long. All season long, Oklahoma has struggled to have healthy wide receivers, and that's definitely hurt their passing game, and they've needed that rushing game to step up like we saw it happen on Saturday night. Again, just very surprising. It was against an Alabama team that's been playing as good as they have the last few games that we saw them. So, you go in, you blow out Missouri, you blow out LSU, you're looking pretty good. You take care of business against Mercer last week, 52-7. You go into Norman, and for Alabama, it's easy. You beat Oklahoma, win the Iron Bowl, you're in the college football playoff. After this loss now, it is going to be very tough for this Alabama team to kind of refocus. They're 9-3 on the season. They're 8-3 on the season. One more game coming up against Auburn, who looked pretty good against A&M on Saturday night as well. So what Alabama team do we get? Do we get the inconsistent Alabama team that's turning the football over that we saw against Vandy, that we saw against Tennessee, and that we saw against Oklahoma on Saturday night? If so, we could be in for a very interesting Iron Bowl this weekend. But if we get that Alabama team that is locked in, like we saw against LSU, like we saw against Missouri, then we easily could see Alabama walk away with this, get their ninth win on the season. But unfortunately, Alabama fans, you're not going to want to hear it. You're not going to be in the college football playoff. Even though I said, and I remember going back a couple of weeks, Austin Price was here in the studio and we were talking about it, and I said there was still a path that a three-loss Alabama team could get into the college football playoff. Well, that three-loss Alabama team that I was referring to at that point in time was a team that would have had a loss to somebody like an LSU, who at that point in time when we were having that conversation seemed like they were a college football playoff contender as well. They have now since trailed off and fallen off, right? So that win for Alabama does not look impressive, right? Really, the only win that Alabama can hang their hat on is Georgia. Then on the flip side of that, you go, okay, well, you lost the lead in the second half and lost a game to Tennessee. You never really had the game in hand against Vandy. They flat out just outcoached, outplayed, and outmanned you, which is very weird to say, but that's what happened. And now you go to Norman, Oklahoma, you turn the ball over three times, giving Oklahoma a 14-point advantage, by the way. Oklahoma scored two of their three touchdowns off of Jalen Milroe interceptions. One of them being the pick six you heard right there to start the show. And another one, it was a pick six that just sat Oklahoma up on the plus side of the 50. You can't turn the ball over that many times and then struggle to run the football like Alabama did on Saturday night and expect to win that game. And I'm going to tell you what, right now, to all the Alabama fans that are saying, oh, Kalen DeBoer is terrible, we want Saban back, I hate to break it to you, Nick Saban would not have won that game last Saturday night. Not even Nick Saban could have won a game where you have three turnovers and only 70 yards rushing the entire game. Now, I know the argument's going to be made, well, with Nick Saban, they wouldn't have had that. With Nick Saban, they wouldn't have had the turnovers. But even if they had, and Nick Saban was on the sideline still, there's no way Alabama was ever winning that game. Stop blaming Kalen DeBoer, right? It doesn't fall on him. Honestly, if I'm going to put the blame on anybody, I'm putting the blame on Milroe in that game. Three interceptions, just did not seem focused, just did not seem ready. Frustrated throughout most of the night. So I'm not putting that on Kalen DeBoer. Vandy, yeah, we could probably put that on Kalen DeBoer. That team was not ready to play Vanderbilt. They definitely overlooked Vandy. And they might have overlooked Oklahoma a little bit here, looking at a 5-5 team, saying, well, we're a college football playoff contender. They're 5-5. We should be able to beat them. So maybe they did overlook Oklahoma. And if they did, then that is on Kalen DeBoer. But the X's and O's and the Jimmys and Joes, what I saw on the field Saturday night, that offensive line could not open up a hole to save their life for the run game. Jalen Milroe was just, like I said, just not himself, just not focused, not locked in and ready to go. It wasn't Kalen DeBoer, it was the offense for Alabama. Defense did their job. Oklahoma really only scored, truthfully, 10 points. The other 14 came off of Jalen Milroe turnovers. You just can't have that if you're Alabama, especially when you're in a position they are where you're playing for your playoff hopes each and every single week as a two-loss team. So now Bama out of the playoff picture. And after a wild, crazy weekend we had in college football, several other teams are out of the playoff picture. And we will get to those throughout today's show, of course, and we'll recap some of the NFL action as well as you are listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I'm Jordan Glass, and of course, as always, you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. Colorado and Kansas. Colorado, another one of those teams that was sitting out in that bubble waiting for some other teams ahead of them to lose, and all they had to do was win. And they could not get it done. Kansas, once again. I mean, Kansas is just, their season has been an anomaly, right? Like, as bad as they've looked, whenever they play, look at how they played against Iowa State. Then you go, okay, that was a fluke game. There's no way that's going to happen again. It's against BYU. And it happens again. And then you go, okay, well, Colorado, I mean, Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders, Coach Prime, the way they're running the football now with the Buffs. Come on, you got to think Colorado is probably going to be that team that doesn't let Kansas upset them. And it happens again. I don't know what horseshoe the Kansas Jayhawks have shoved up where, and honestly and truthfully, probably don't want to know, but there's got to be some four-leaf clovers there too, because this is one of the luckiest teams I have ever seen. To go up against this many highly ranked opponents and beat them, and just, not the score may not be convincingly, right? May not be a blowout, but when you watch that game, it's not like a, oh, well, BYU screwed up and that's what cost them the game. No, Kansas beat them. Kansas beat Iowa State. Kansas beat Colorado. At one point in that game on Saturday against Colorado, Kansas had more plays in Colorado's territory on the plus side of the 50 than Colorado had the entire game. At one point, Kansas had 37 plays inside Colorado's territory. Colorado had like 32 plays for the entire game. That is not how that offense wants to operate. That's not how that team wants to operate. It's not how they're coached. And I will, you know what? I will commend Coach Prime, because I don't think a lot of coaches would have said this to their team in the locker room. I think it would have been a, you know, most coaches probably would have been a, hey, don't hang your head. You know, we still got a lot to play for this season, blah, 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 blah. Look at how far we've come from where we were last year to where we're at now. Coach Prime didn't say that. He said, no, you got intoxicated by success. You were reading your own press clippings. You are all that junk that Nick Saban refers to as rat poison. All that rat poison that was out there for you, you started buying into it. You started believing it. And now Kansas embarrassed you here in Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. And he's absolutely correct on that. Absolutely correct on that. This team thought that they could just roll into this game and beat Kansas. And clearly they haven't been paying attention to what Kansas has been doing this year. I credit the Jayhawks. Another fantastic game and another big win for them. They're not going to go to a bowl game, but, I mean, when you beat a top 20 Colorado team, a top 10 BYU team, a top 15 Iowa State team, you got three bowl wins right there, if you ask me. A fantastic, just the College Football Playoff Committee should love Kansas right now, because it's just they're single-handedly creating chaos inside the College Football Playoffs. Of course, we're talking about Kansas knocking off Colorado right here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Not the only Big 12 school to get knocked off. BYU, second straight week in a row. It was Kansas a week ago. This week, I said it on Friday, watch out for Arizona State in this game. And sure enough, the Sun Devils showed up, and they won this game. Cam Scadabo rushed for 147 yards. Sam Leavitt had another 247 yards passing with a touchdown. Scadabo ran for three touchdowns. These two guys, I don't think Arizona State has the season they're having this year if it's not for these two guys. These guys have really kind of been a part of that resurgence there for the Sun Devils in Arizona. So it is going to be very interesting to see now with this loss. BYU gets their second loss on the year. Doesn't necessarily take them out of College Football Playoff contention. Honestly and truthfully, no, because they can still win the Big 12, right? BYU is still in that Big 12 conversation, so I don't think they're eliminated from that. They would need to win the conference championship in order to get there. But no, I don't think they're eliminated from that. It is actually going to be very fun to see what happens this final week inside the Big 12. Because here's the thing. You have a three-way tie at the top of that conference between Arizona State, BYU, and Iowa State. As a three-way tie. None of those teams play each other this weekend. All of those teams, honestly and truthfully, play games that they should probably win. So what is going to happen with those three teams at the top? Obviously, you've got the crazy rule break scenarios of who owns the head-to-head matchup, what, you know, happened here in this game that's going to translate into this game. So who knows what's going to happen with the Big 12? Obviously, right now, Arizona State holds the tiebreaker over BYU after Saturday night's win. But the Big 12 is going to be a migraine to figure out who's going to be in that conference championship. And again, we talked about Colorado buying into their own press clippings. They're still very much in it. Even though they are 8-3 on the season, they are still very much in it. Because if they win this weekend, they get a little help, get a couple of upsets, some knocks off of the team ahead of them, then who knows? Colorado could sneak their way into the Big 12 championship. And again, if they win, conference champion gets into the College Football Playoff. So the Big 12 is just going to be it's going to be a mess. We got a text here from Ronald. He said, how about old Napier? Yeah, hashtag got to keep him. Yeah, no, Ronald, you're absolutely right, as always. Ronald is always on point with his observations, whether he's texting in or calling in. We do appreciate it, buddy. But, yeah, no, you got to keep Napier now. And I know 5 weeks ago I was like, you got to fire him. He's a bum. You got to fire him. He's not an SEC coach. But what this team has done, the way they've rallied together, the way they've fixed all the issues, You add in a guy like DJ Lagway, Florida is now bowl eligible. Vegas had them at winning, like, they're over-under. Like, the best win percentage for them was 4 wins. They've already got 6. They've got a great opportunity at getting 7 against Florida State this weekend. And then if they win the bowl game, that's 8 wins. After that A&M game, who would have saw 8 wins coming for Florida in 2024? I'm not putting my hand up because I wouldn't have seen it. I saw 8 losses, to be honest with you. And that's why I honestly and truthfully, I thought Billy Napier was going to be fired. I thought he would get blown out by Texas, which he did, but different circumstances there. Lots of players hurt. DJ Lagway's in that game. Who knows how that game looks? Lost to Georgia. But honestly, again, DJ Lagway's in that game. Who knows what happens if he stays healthy? I mean, the turnaround that Florida has done this year, it is absolutely incredible to see. They're going bowling. They're in the postseason. They've got a chance at getting 7 wins. They're going to move on to 8. I'm very impressed with the turnaround that happened down there in Gainesville. So, yeah, Ronald, I completely agree with you on that text. You definitely have to keep Billy Napier for sure now. And if you want to do like Ronald and text in or call in and be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. This is the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola. And as far as the Gators go with that win on Saturday, I mean, DJ Lagway didn't have a bad day at the office. 10 of 17, 180 yards, 2 TDs, and an interception. But I'm going to tell you what, man, that defense is what won it for Florida, right? Because what does Ole Miss like to do? Other than score a lot of points, they will go for it on fourth down, right? They've got that package where they bring in the big bodies, they bring in those big 380-pound guys, and they will let them go and get those fourth and short yard situations. Florida stopped them multiple times in that game. Florida's defense is the reason that they won that game. And I will give, if I'm giving anything to the offense, again, DJ Lagway didn't have a bad day, but I'm going to give it towards the running game. Ole Miss, one of the best rushing defenses in the entire country, and Montrell Johnson by himself had 127 yards and a touchdown against one of the, like, ranked inside the top 5, top 10 nationally against the run. For Ole Miss's defense, Montrell Johnson alone 127 yards. That's not even talking about what Jacoby Jackson did, or what, you know, Jaden Ball did. That's just Montrell Johnson by himself. But again, the defense, man, I gotta credit the defense. Bryce Thornton, early in that game, Bryce Thornton gets beat for not one but 2 touchdowns. Looks like it's gonna be a long day for him. He settles in. Starts making plays, sound tackling outside in space, right? Ole Miss likes to do these quick tunnel screens and things like that to help them pick up first downs, move the chains, allow them to kind of get in that rhythm and start moving fast. They had hit those plays, and boom, Bryce Thornton would be right there with a clean open field tackle to bring him down immediately for like a gain of 1 instead of picking up 8 or 9 like they normally do. Then on top of that, who picks off the 2 passes by Jackson Dart in the fourth quarter to close out the game? Bryce Thornton. So congratulations to Florida. Congratulations to Bryce Thornton. Congratulations to that Gator defense, man. Just an outstanding game for them on Saturday. They're going to have, a great opportunity at getting win number 7 on this upcoming Saturday as they take on Florida State in Tallahassee. And then who knows what bowl game they're going to end up to. I think, like, projections – have them in the Birmingham Bowl, maybe the Music City Bowl. Interesting matchup I saw would be them playing Michigan in the Music City Bowl. I wouldn't hate that game. That'd be a fun game. Let's take our first time out of the show. When we come back, we're not done talking about college football and some of the upsets from this weekend and some of the big games from this weekend. We still have not gotten to that big one in Columbus. We'll talk about it coming up next right here on the Glass Half Full.
Calling all FSU Seminole fans, Tomahawk Talk is here. Tune in Wednesday from 9 till 10 right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, to get the latest on Florida State football. Hear from the experts, the superfans, and even some former players about what's happening on the field, the sidelines, to the locker room. It's your chance to be a part of the conversation and let your war chant out. It's Tomahawk Talk, Wednesday from 9 till 10. Tomahawk Talk, brought to you by the law firm of Gross & Schuster.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas.
So how do you know which games we're carrying?
Easy. Just follow us on Facebook, /ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola. All sports, all the time.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Monday morning, 923 here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Still talking about college football because we had a lot to talk about from this weekend. That is for sure. How about that big game in the horseshoe between Ohio State and Indiana? Look, early on, I thought the Hoosiers were going to be a team that ran away with this. I did. I thought that, you know, they come out, they get the quick score, then they get the goal line stand there to kind of get the ball back. But then again, credit Ohio State. Again, just doing what they've done all year long, and that is just kind of settling in and recovering from a slow start. I mean, you look at the way the Penn State game started, right? That was a game for them that really, honestly and truthfully, you know, not an ideal start if you're the Buckeyes. You throw that pick six, you're down, what was it? They were down 10-0 or something like that early on. Penn State goes down, gets the field goal, then Will Howard throws the pick six, but they settled in, they came back, they win the game. Same here, you know. Indiana drives down, takes a quick 7-0 lead. Ohio State gets stopped. You know, looks like they're building some potential. But unfortunately, they just, you know, they get stopped there at the goal line on the goal line stand, and all of a sudden you're going, okay, here we go with Indiana. They're gonna, you know, we're seeing the Indiana team that we were curious to see if we would see. And then Ohio State said, no. They put their foot down, and man, the second half that they had, obviously Alabama transfer Caleb Downs, big spark there in the second half for the Buckeyes with that second half punt return, just putting people in, just putting them in a blender with a spin move, doing a couple of jukes in there, a nice punt return, really. It's just a perfect punt return. That's what you want to see, right? If you're a special teams coach, you love seeing a punt return like that, getting some good blocks, but also your punt returner making some guys miss as well, and then he just uses that speed to get to the end zone. So that was a big boost for them. It also helped Will Howard through for 200 yards and two tutties. He did have a pick, but, I mean, again, you know, overall, a pretty good day at the office for Will Howard. Indiana, the thing that was crazy to me is that Indiana's high-powered offense actually held under 200 yards. Indiana only had 68 yards passing and 85 yards rushing this entire game. This Buckeyes defense showed up ready to play, right? This high-powered Indiana Kurt Cignetti offense that everybody was excited to see play in the horseshoe could not do anything outside of that opening drive. That first drive, they looked great, right? Like I said, that first drive, we're looking at it going, all right, here we go. We're going to have a ball game here. Indiana showed up ready to play. And then the Buckeyes just put their foot down and said, you know what? We're tired of hearing that we can't win these big games. We're tired of hearing that our coach, Ryan Day, can't win these big games. Not only are we going to win it, but we're going to go out there and we're going to do it in an impressive fashion. And they did that. 23 points. Look, Ohio State is a college football playoff team. Even if they, look, let's say they beat Michigan And then they lose again to Oregon by like a field goal in the Big Ten championship game for their second loss of the year. The committee's got to put in Ohio State. I think with this win, with how they won on Saturday against Indiana, I think it puts the stamp on them. They're in. Regardless of what happens. I mean, look, if Michigan knocks them off on Saturday, then there's going to be a little bit of a controversy there. But I don't see that happening. I think Ohio State will win this game. They'll finally get some needed revenge after the last few years of Jim Harbaugh. They'll finally get some needed revenge against Michigan. They'll get back in the winning column against that rival. And then they're on their way to the Big Ten championship game. So as long as they beat Michigan this upcoming weekend, they should be in, no matter what happens in the Big Ten championship game. Would you like to exact revenge on Oregon for that one-point loss earlier in the season in Eugene? Oh, absolutely. Would you like to win the Big Ten title? Oh, absolutely. But I'm telling you right now, if that's another close game between Oregon and Ohio State and it's decided by like a field goal or something like that, oh, Ohio State is still in the college football playoff. There's no doubt in my mind. The fact that they looked as dominant as they did on Saturday against Indiana, they shut down that high-powered Indiana offense that's just been going crazy on everybody all season long. They're in. It doesn't matter what happens to them in the Big Ten championship game. They are in. Of course, we're talking about Ohio State beating Indiana here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Glass Half Full. If you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Some other big games from the weekend that really kind of stood out to me. How about A&M? Right? Another one of those teams that not only was sitting there going, you know what? We control our destiny. We beat Auburn. We beat Texas to close out the regular season. There is a chance for us to not only get into the conference championship, but win the conference championship and set ourselves up to be a pretty high seed in the college football playoff. Maybe even possibly get one of those bye weeks and automatically be in the semis. But now, A&M's just trying to figure out where they're going to book their bowl game for because they're out. They're out of SEC. They're out of – well, I say they're out of SEC. Something crazy could happen this weekend. Who knows, right? Who knows what could happen in the SEC, right? But after that loss to Auburn in overtime, in four overtimes on Saturday – I don't know if Texas A&M has enough for the committee to put them in. I don't know. I think that there has to be, mathematically, I don't believe they are completely eliminated. I feel like if there is some chaos that happens, if they beat Texas, there's some other teams, they've got to have a lot of help. All right. They've got to have a lot of 12th man magic going on this upcoming Saturday after Thanksgiving. But if they can find that 12th man magic and that stuff can happen, then they could find themselves in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. And who knows what could happen after that. I think this A&M team needed to win this game. They did everything they could to win this game. I mean, Auburn had a 21-7 lead at halftime. And Texas A&M comes back and just storms back into this game. I mean, Marcel Reed, a great day for him at the office. 300 yards, three tutties, and an interception. Peyton Thorne, not a bad day for him either. 301 yards, two touchdowns, an interception. It's numbers we haven't really seen from Peyton Thorne this year against good competition. And Auburn looked impressive, right? So let's not go into the Iron Bowl this weekend thinking that it's going to be a pushover and the Tigers are just going to lay down for the Crimson Tide. It's not going to happen. It's the Iron Bowl. They're going to be there. They're going to be ready to go. And if Peyton Thorne plays like he did on this upcoming Saturday, like he did last Saturday, he's going to put Auburn in an opportunity to actually knock off Alabama in the Iron Bowl. Yeah, I said that. I'm not making my pick until Friday because honestly and truthfully, I'm not sure who I want to pick in this game. But with the way Auburn looked in this game, defense aside, because the defense wasn't really there, of course, the defense wasn't there for either team, but I still think that this was a game that shows to Auburn fans, Auburn's moving in the right direction with Hugh Freeze. Let Hugh Freeze continue to do what he does best, and that's recruit, bring in top talent. Once he stockpiles Auburn a little bit more, suddenly Auburn will be in that conversation of being one of those teams that is in the college football playoff talk. Trust me, I think Hugh Freeze is about to turn the corner at Auburn, and this win might have done it for him. As far as what it does for A&M, like I said, it hurts their playoff. Actually, it eliminates their playoff chances. It hurts their SEC championship chances. If they can find a way to get to the conference championship game and win it, then that might revive their playoff chance. But right now, they're out. They are a three-loss team, and they are out. And like I said, they have to have a lot of chaos ahead of them in order to get into the SEC championship game just to have a chance to sniff the college football playoff. So it's highly unlikely the Aggies will be playing in Atlanta the first weekend in December. It's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. One thing I want to talk about real quick before we go to break, and it's just going to – I'm going to try not to rant on this because I know Friday I went off on a rant about people viewing the committee and why they didn't put SEC teams higher inside the college football playoff polls because, oh, this team's better than that team and we'd beat Ohio State on a neutral field, blah, blah, blah. I think this past weekend showed that is not true. Because, and I tweeted this out over the weekend, going into Saturday, the SEC had six teams for the college football playoff. Right now they have two. Texas and maybe Tennessee and Georgia. So we'll give them three. That's it. That is it for the SEC. You went from having six teams possibly in, almost half the conference possibly in, to now you only got about two or three. That's why you don't jump down the committee's throat when they don't rank you higher just because you think you should be there. Still got to play the games. But before I get too far into that, the whole storming the field thing that we're doing this year, can we not? Like, seriously, can we not? I get it. Oh, yeah, you won a big game. But here's the thing. Some of these schools have won multiple big games this year, and they've stormed the field multiple times. It starts to lessen that tradition, right? When it's happening almost every week, it starts to lessen that tradition. If you eat chocolate cake every day of every week for an entire year, by the time you get to that end of that year, you are going to be tired of chocolate cake, aren't you? You're probably going to have some diabetes too because that's a lot of sugar. You're probably going to be overweight and unhealthy. But my point is that you're going to be tired of chocolate cake because you're constantly getting chocolate cake, right? So when we're constantly storming the field over a big win, it lessens how important and how special of a thing storming the field was. Because here's the thing. Storming the field used to be for these massive underdogs when they would get a big win. A game that nobody ever thought they could win, but they find some way to do it, and by golly, they storm the field. Now when you have teams winning by 20 points and the fans storm the field because, hey, we're going to storm the field, it's so ridiculous. Also, if you are going to storm the field, wait till regulation is over. Wait till there is zeros on the clock. Looking at you, Oklahoma, because you're the last to do it. 28 seconds in the game, Oklahoma fans trying to run onto the field. Arizona State fans came onto the field early. Of course, that was that whole review thing of there being 1 second and all that stuff, so that's kind of a little different. But for Oklahoma fans to come out almost 30 seconds before the game is over, there is half a minute remaining in the game, and you're trying to run onto the field? And it's not the first time. We've had that happen multiple times this year where fans have come onto the field too early. Why? Why are you coming onto the field at all? That's why, you know what? I will tip my cap to the Ohio State Buckeye fans. Beat a top 10, top 5 team in Indiana. Did they storm the field? No. And before anybody goes, well, that's because they were the number 2 team in the country. Oh, no. Don't get it twisted. There are some fan bases out there that if they were ranked higher, they'd still storm the field. Florida fans, after not only beating LSU last week, but Ole Miss this week, did not even think of stepping foot on the field. Several other schools, their fan bases have done the same. But to those that just continue to want to jump onto the field, you're causing damage to the stadium. You're causing damage to the field. You're creating an unsafe environment. It was like, I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been when Clemson lost a couple of weeks ago. And the fans stormed the field. And some fan just runs right at an offensive lineman for Clemson and tries to, like, I guess he was trying to shoulder check him or whatever, and getting sent flying backwards 3 yards. And now here we are on social media. People are sharing that video going, oh, look what he did. Oh, look, he was so mad that they were storming the field. He hit him. No, the idiot ran into him. It's not his fault he ran into a 6'7", 400-pound brick wall. Creates unsafe environments. Can we please stop storming the field? Plus, by the way, you're costing the university hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. Just stop storming the field. You want to celebrate? You're in a college town. And just like any college town in the SEC or the ACC or the Big Ten or the Big 12, I guarantee you there are plenty of establishments you can go celebrate at outside of the stadium. Stop storming the field. It's not a good look. You're costing your school money, not just because they have to pay fines, but because they then have to fix the shrubbery, they have to fix the walls, they have to fix the field, all of that stuff. Plus, it's just dumb. We'll take another time out when we come back. More of the Glass Half Full right after this.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Here on a Monday morning at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back in to the Glass Half Full. I am Jordan Glass, and of course, as always, if you want to be a part of today's show, you can definitely do that, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Getting into some NFL now, some of the games from over the weekend. Obviously, we had Thursday night, Jameis Winston and the Browns getting a big win over the Steelers. I did not see that win coming. That is for sure. I picked the Steelers in that game. Thought the Steelers would probably be able to win it pretty handily. But the Browns, Chubb just did a great job running the ball for them and creating that opportunity for them to get the big win, 24-19 there. Let's see some of the other games we had from this weekend. Minnesota on the road taking on Da Bears, 30-27 in overtime for the Vikings. Caleb Williams arguably having the best game of his NFL career to this point, 32-47, 340 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So definitely a big game for him. And you look at a big reason why Chicago was very much in this game was because of the way that Caleb Williams played. And if you hear Matt Eberflus talk, one of the reasons, like, you know, he's starting to see Caleb Williams, it's starting to click. He's starting to get it. He was talking about, you know, the communication, not just in the huddle or on the field, but even in the meeting rooms and things like that, the communication that Caleb Williams is starting to have with his teammates, that he's starting to have, he's starting to act like a leader. And Matt Eberflus is definitely happy about that. He loves the way that Caleb is progressing. And like I said, had probably the best game of his career against a good Minnesota team this past weekend. Just could not get it done. Sam Darnold did end up playing for the Vikings. He was questionable through most of the week last week. Did end up playing and did a pretty good job for him in this game. He did enough to get him the win. That's the important thing. He did enough to get them the win, and they are now 9-2 on the season. I think the thing with me, when I look at the Vikings, and I heard them talking about this morning on Sportsmanlike when I was driving in, I get where people are hesitant to trust Sam Darnold, but at the same time, has Sam Darnold not done enough this year to prove that he is actually a legitimate viable quarterback in the NFL? Like, everybody seems to be waiting for that other shoe to drop, for Sam Darnold to go have a bad game where he throws 6 interceptions and they get blown out. And so far, here we are 11 games into the 17-game season, and that has not happened yet. It has not happened yet. He's continuing to play good each and every week. Some weeks may be better than others, sure. But he's playing enough to set them up to be able to win games. And they're 9-2 on the year. And he is a big part of that. So can we start trusting Sam Darnold a little bit more? I understand the conversation and the argument that was made this morning on First Take was that we need to see him do it in the playoffs, because we've seen, and this is what was said this morning on Unsportsmanlike, we've seen Kirk Cousins look really good in the regular season. But then he loses a game to somebody like the New York Giants and Daniel Jones in the playoffs. So I guess it's kind of one of those things to where we are not going to really see any kind of serious respect for Sam Darnold as a quarterback in the NFL until he goes and wins a playoff game. But I'm telling you right now, he's got the talent around him. The right team is around Sam Darnold at the right time. They get into the postseason, they're going to have an opportunity at winning some games. I still fully believe that the NFC goes through Detroit. I think Detroit ends up winning that division. But I do still think that this is a team in the Minnesota Vikings with Sam Darnold that can actually have some success. It's the Glass Half Full here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I am Jordan Glass. If you want to be a part of today's show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. You can be a part of the show by texting or calling that number. Some of the other games from this weekend, the Lions doing exactly what you expect them to do. Like I said, I full-heartedly expect the NFC to have to go through Detroit. They are 10-1 on the year, 24-6 win over the Colts in that game. Another good game for Jared Goff, 26-36 for 269 yards in that game. The Miami Dolphins have won there. Was it third straight now with Tua Tagovailoa back from that concussion earlier this year? He went 29-40 for 317 yards, 4 touchdowns. Jaylen Waddle, his best game in his NFL career, 8 catches for 144 yards and a touchdown as they take care of business against the Patriots, 34-15. So they improved to 5-6 on the year. Don't look now. Dolphins starting to win those games the way they need to in order to get it back into the wild card conversation, because, again, the Bills are going to win the AFC East. They've pretty much already unofficially clinched that division. So if the Dolphins do get into the playoffs, once again, it's going to be as a wild card team. Don't look now. They are playing the way they need to, because it's not just Tua in that offense. It's Zach Sealer, it's Chop, it's all those guys on the defensive side of the ball for the Dolphins that have stepped up and really played well the last few weeks. So Miami kind of taking that turn. We'll have to keep an eye on the Dolphins as far as that playoff race goes. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 30-7 win over the Giants. Cowboys finally getting back in that win column, 34-26 win over the Commanders. The Chiefs struggle win over the Panthers, 30-27. The Titans take care of business against the Texans, 32-27. The Broncos, a big win for them, 29-19 on the road against the Raiders. 38-10 win for the Packers over the 49ers. 49ers frustrated in that game, I'm sure. That's a nice little rivalry game inside the NFL. But again, you got to look at it, no Brock Purdy, right? No Brock Purdy for the 49ers. George Kittle is healthy-ish, hasn't really been that strong all season. So 49ers down some guys there in that game, playing a really good Packers team that is 8-3 on the year. Seahawks, they battle back to take care of business against the Cardinals, 16-6. Had to outscore Arizona 9-3 in the second half in order to get that win. Looks like the Eagles take care of business last night, 37-20 in that game. And, of course, we'll have more on that game as well as the some other headlines when we hit our headline roundup coming up on the other side of this break. It's our final timeout of the show. When we come back, like I said, your headline roundup, plus we'll look at tonight's Monday Night Football matchup right here on The Glass Half Full.
The Rich Eisen Show on weekdays after Greeny at 11 to 2 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Wrapping things up here on a Monday morning on The Glass Half Full. Thank you so much for tuning in. It is time now for your headline roundup as we take a look at the top headlines around the world of sports. Saquon Barkley set an Eagles single-game rushing yard record last night against the Rams, 255 yards in that game. So definitely a big night there for Saquon Barkley and a big part of that win for the Eagles. Patrick Mahomes, a little frustrated. He wants to see more blowout wins for the Chiefs. They had another close game against Carolina on Sunday. And, yeah, if you kind of look at the Chiefs and where they've been, not just the last couple of weeks, really, but this entire season, it's been the season of close wins for them. So I definitely can understand where Patrick Mahomes is coming from. He wants to win some games handily and not have to worry about it in the fourth quarter. 49ers embarrassed by 28 points in that loss to the Packers. But again, the 49ers, you don't have Brock Purdy. A lot of your other guys are playing, but they're not really fully healthy, even if they say they are, especially George Kittle still dealing with some hamstring stuff. Christian McCaffrey kind of still just trying to get back into the mix as best as he can from being out majority of the season so far. So really the 49ers, yes, it was a tough loss. Yes, you hate to lose to the Packers, especially like that. But considering the circumstances, the mash unit that this team is right now, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, okay, there's actually reasons there. It's not just that they played poorly. Dexter Lawrence, following the Giants' loss to the Buccaneers, called the team soft. Malik Nabers also came out, the rookie, came out and said, yeah, they changed the quarterback, but it's not the quarterback. Quarterback's not the issue here. Yeah, no, there are a lot of things wrong with the New York Giants right now, and it's only going to continue to get worse the longer they let people stick around there and continue to do their jobs because, well, they're not doing their jobs. UCLA in women's college basketball ends South Carolina's 43-game winning streak. South Carolina, the Lady Gamecocks, had won 43 games in a row, and they have now lost that game. Big win for UCLA over the weekend. Our Monday Night Football game tonight is going to be a matchup of brothers, as Jim Harbaugh is going to take on John Harbaugh between the Ravens and the Chargers. Really, if you look at the record, these two teams are pretty even, right? The Chargers are 7-3, Baltimore 7-4. But the one thing, and this is not a knock on Justin Herbert, the one thing the Chargers don't have is Lamar Jackson. And honestly, truthfully, this season, you could say they don't have Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry, right? But I think even with all of that said, I think the matchup I'm looking at is going to be this Chargers running game, believe it or not. Not Derrick Henry. I know, again, I talked about it until it actually happened. Derrick Henry runs for 100 yards. The Ravens don't lose. All of that stuff. Yes, when Derrick Henry has a good game, the Ravens usually tend to win that game. But I'm telling you right now, the matchup to watch is J.K. Dobbins versus this Ravens rushing defense. This Ravens rushing defense has been pretty solid throughout most of the year, so it's going to come down to, can J.K. Dobbins run the football? Because remember, what does Jim Harbaugh want to do? He's going to want to run the football. He wants to be a physical team. He wants to use the run, much like he did it at Michigan, much like he did at San Francisco, and much like he did at Stanford. He wants to use the run to open up the pass, right? So can J.K. Dobbins run on this Ravens defense? If they're able to shut him down, I think that's going to cause issues for this Charger offense tonight. I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a close one. I like the Ravens on the road, though. 27-23, the final in this one. I'm going to go with Baltimore. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will have more of the Glass Half Full coming your way tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. right here. ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Hey, stay tuned. Greeny, he's coming up next.